This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Earlene McMichael. Today we bring you an encore presentation of my January interview with Cherie Thomas. She's the new director of the Douglas Community Association, a nearly 100-year-old outreach center in Kalamazoo that keeps keeping on thanks to public support. Thomas has been on the job now for 5 months. Back in January, she said she hoped to start a mentoring program for African-American males ages 12 to 16 in the spring. I checked back with her, and she will launch the Douglas Men of Promise this month and plans to go a step further. Also this month, Thomas starts a companion self-esteem building group for African-American girls called Girls Inventing Real Life Solutions. Thomas came to the Douglas Community Association with extensive leadership experience in the nonprofit arena, much of it spent at the Kalamazoo YWCA. You're a familiar face here in the city of Kalamazoo.
I've spent the majority of my career here in Kalamazoo with the YWCA of Kalamazoo, approximately about 14 years at the YWCA. I'm also a board member of SHARE, the Society for History and Racial Equity, formerly the Black Heritage Society.
And you used to be the board chair of
that
organization.
I was the board chair. Absolutely. Yes. Also, you know, I participated in a social justice project here that was held at Kalamazoo Valley Museum, Voices for Social Justice. And in Kalamazoo, that's what I do. I participate in civic activity, making sure that we're providing equitable services for all members of our community.
Let's go back to the Kalamazoo YWCA, where you spent the bulk of your career. You left with the title of Director of Women's Violence and Housing Services. You were also a consultant and a facilitator on topics concerning diversity, cultural competence, and domestic and sexual violence. Tell us about your work at the Y.
So at the YWCA, I held a number of different positions, but with the last position, I ran the domestic violence shelter, the transitional supportive housing program, and the permanent supportive housing program there, making sure that women who were survivors of domestic violence, intimate partner violence, sexual assault were able to have safe, affordable housing while they were healing from their trauma.
Can you talk to us a little bit about how that work that you did at the Y is going to be helpful to you in your work at the Douglas?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that we don't often talk about are the root causes of trauma. At the Douglas Community Association, we have the Frederick Douglass Recovery Center. And the Frederick Douglass Recovery Center provides counseling services. It provides trauma-informed groups for men, women. We're also going to be starting in February groups for boys and for girls to address those underlying causes that we see in behavior problems that arise in school, in their community activities, and in their family lives as well. And so while working at the YWCA, we dealt a lot with families that were broken, that were dealing with trauma. And particularly those youth weren't getting the services that they needed in order to be able to address the trauma that they were experiencing in their lives.
Originally, when it was founded in 1919, I guess you all just celebrated, what, your 97th year?
Correct.
It started as a recreational hall for African-American soldiers and veterans during World War I and II. And like you say, it was named after Frederick Douglass. It gradually evolved in 1964 to offer these types of social services. Can you give our listeners a sense of what's under the roof at the Douglass?
Yeah, absolutely. So your listeners may be aware of the fact that there's the Alma Pyle Branch Library located under the roof. There's also a branch of the Boys and Girls Club underneath the roof. But there are also other nonprofits that provide valuable services, such as Mothers of Hope, the NAACP. There's a Michigan Works Path program located inside. There's also a music program for children located inside as well. The county comes once a month and does STD testing, HIV testing. Once a month, third Wednesday of every month, yesterday, in fact, we provide food distribution through a partnership with Loaves and Fishes. And so those are some of the things that people may not be aware of that are happening in the Douglas.
And the budget right now, does it stand in and around about $800,000 or is it more
than that?
That is correct. Let's talk about some other aspects of your background. this is not your first time at the Douglas. You were a program manager there. What was the nature of that work?
So as a program manager at the Douglas, one of my jobs was to bring in additional programming, making sure that the youth and community members had access to other programs that are offered in Kalamazoo, but bringing those things into the community so they didn't have to leave the community to access those things. So for example, the Air Zoo came in and offered programming, connecting with the Nature Center, connecting with the Kalamazoo Institute of Arts to bring programming directly to the community for the community.
You've held a number of leadership positions in the nonprofit arena, including most recently program manager for the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence. Was that based in Lansing or
Okemos?
Speaking of being based, where are you a native of?
Toledo, Ohio, born and raised.
And you actually obtained a number of degrees there from the University of Toledo, I believe?
Yes, various degrees. So
yeah.
I have an associate's in corrections. I have a bachelor's in liberal studies with a concentration in women and disability studies, a master's degree in liberal studies with a concentration in diversity and multicultural studies, and I also have a certification in diversity management. Now, the evolution of those degrees is what's most interesting. They're more interesting than the degrees themselves.
Talk about that.
So when I talk about equity, you know, I think about my own life experience. And when I first went to college, I wanted to be a psychologist. And I unfortunately had an advisor who was not very diversity minded, who told me that was not an option for me and listed out these options, right? And so corrections was one of those options, 2-year degree, right? And that's the path that I took. However, I had a quarter left. We were on quarter systems at that time when I found out that that was not the truth. And I found that out because I was assigned a new counselor who, you know, told me that if I wanted to do psychology, I could have gone into psychology. They actually had a pre-psychology program, 2-year degree. So I ended up with this associates in corrections. And I actually had an opportunity to teach parenting classes and domestic violence classes in a correctional facility. And during that time, I knew that working in a correctional facility was not something that I wanted to do because I saw too many people who looked like me behind bars. And just the despair that was present and the hopelessness made me know that this was not where I was supposed to be. Where I was supposed to be was in a position to help people not end up in those places. And if they did, provide a route for them to actually be sustainable once they were released. And so when I got my bachelor's degree, I chose my bachelor's degree because I was actually employed at the YWCA in Toledo, Ohio at the time. And women and disabilities was an area in which I saw great need. I saw lots of women coming in who were disabled due to the trauma of domestic violence. And many of those women were women of color. Likewise, you know, when I got my master's degree, I was working at the YWCA at the time when I started that journey. And, you know, just the number of people that I ran into who were disenfranchised simply because they were people of color, simply because they were women, simply because they did not have access. And, you know, I felt very strongly, and I say it's my calling, you know, that I actually do servant-based work. I have to do work that is going to make a difference in the community. And if I'm not doing that, then I'm not on my job.
Well, speaking about being on your job, you're now at the Douglas. And before you got there, you know, it had encountered, you know, kind of a bump in the road back in and around, I don't know, about the early 2010s in terms of its finances. It had owed, you know, more than $100,000 in back taxes, and a lot of the major donors had withdrawn their support of the organization. But it has rebuilt, and my understanding is the finances are in the clear. Everything is good right now. And so it's moving forward. Tell me, what is the future plans? I mean, I don't know if it's a fair question for you who just got in this position just for a few weeks, but I imagine the board might have articulated to you at least some things that they would like to see. And then just you, with your background, some things that you might like to bring to the Douglas.
Well, I'm very fortunate in that I am coming in behind Sherry Thomas Cloud, who did an amazing job of making sure that the debt was cleared. So I'm coming in on a clean slate, right? She did a really phenomenal job of assuring that, you know, some of the trust was rebuilt with a lot of the donors. And so they're really excited to see what we're going to do and to be on our journey of transformation. As far as the direction that we're going, we are really, I think you're going to see a lot of programming that is really social justice focused, more deliberate in getting the word out about how everyone can participate in creating an equitable society. One of the things that is a major goal of mine is making sure that the Douglas is a building in which it's always full. One of those buildings in which I have to say, okay, we're closing, it's time to go. You know, really assuring the community that this space is their space. And creating a space, you know, not only where we're, you know, creating programming to uplift the children, but uplift the families as a whole. Douglas is known for, you know, the youth programming and also, you know, the social and recreational programming. People can come in and, you know, rent the community room and spaces for events and things of that nature. But you're going to see a lot more of Douglas-based events coming.
This is West Southwest. You're listening to an extended interview with new Douglas Community Association Executive Director Cherie Thomas that previously aired in January. Moving forward, how is it that people from the community can help? What are some of the greatest needs that you need filled at the Douglas? And maybe you're still assessing that.
Well, it's always a work in progress, but there are always needs that are identified. So one of the immediate needs, you know, is just community support. If anybody wants to come and volunteer, they can always come and volunteer. There are ample volunteer opportunities. You know, I believe that when you have a space that sits right in the community, for the community, it's great if the community can help upkeep that space. So there's, when the spring comes, there's a community garden. So I will be looking for community members to help maintain that community garden. And then, of course, harvest their garden because it is their own garden. We, you know, are going to be looking to repair the parking lot. So if anybody wants to participate in that venture, be it assisting in fundraising or, you know, donation of supplies, that would be wonderful as well. Anybody that wants to be involved in directly working with the youth, spending time tutoring the youth, providing activities for the youth, that is an option for them. If people just want to come and sit and assist with the food drive, we do the food distribution every month. We are always accepting volunteers for that as well. So there are going to be those existing opportunities and more opportunities to come.
How about in the area of finances? Are you thinking about models for financial sustainability in the future? I know it's early. Like, I don't know, an endowment or...
Well, I've been on board a full 30 days. Exactly 30 days. And of course, finances are at the top of the priority list, right? So there will be a continuance of writing grants and applying for different grants, fundraising. So you'll see us having some events in which people can participate to bring funds into the building. And of course, we will be looking towards an endowment because every organization needs that type of sustainability, that long-term type of financial assistance where people can give and it keeps giving.
Yeah, because even if it did not have the issues that it had, just long-term, being able to sustain itself. Grants can come, grants can go.
As well they do, right? And so many times, you know, even the most generous funder sometimes has to reprioritize. And so we are going to be working on creating our own programming that can be self-sustaining.
You're also an author. It's called See Me for Who I Am. What is that book about?
Yes. So I authored See Me for Who I Am in 2011, and that book was intended specifically for people who were providing domestic and sexual assault services to African-American women. It's kind of a guide. It tells a story of a woman who is both a survivor of domestic violence, childhood sexual assault, and then witnessing that her own child being a victim of sexual assault. And just what that journey looks like and the experience of not having someone who actually understands the journey besides you. The feeling of being judged, misunderstood, and the ramifications that it has long term. So it's a handbook for people who are providing those services to allow them to have some empathy and some insight into the unique needs that women of color present with.
Is that a true story?
It is.
Was it hard to convince the person?
It was, which is why their name has been changed to protect their identity.
I see. What is it that is unique to African-American women and that particular topic?
Well, there are so many things, but let's start with the very basics, right? So African-American women, since they have arrived on the shores of the U.S., have been subject to violence, sexual assault, and domestic violence. And so that trauma was never dealt with. So it's consistently being passed on. And so while they were experiencing that, their male counterparts were also experiencing that as well. Not only witnessing it, but at times they were also perpetrators, sometimes willingly, sometimes not so. But all of this trauma is being built up and no one's actually dealing with the trauma. On top of that, domestic violence is all about power and control issues, right? So people who are perpetrating domestic violence today are doing so with intention. The same thing with people who are choosing to commit sexual assaults. It's an intentional act. But then there are also those pieces that you have to look at, such as how racism is impacting those things, how gender equity are impacting those things, and how those things intersect. And they intersect in a unique way for African-American women because there are levels of oppression that aren't addressed because they are African-American women. Most of the systems that have been designed to address domestic and sexual violence were done primarily for our white counterparts. You know, it was their system that came together. Although, during the history of the women's rights movement, movement to end domestic and sexual violence, women of color were very much present. Their voices were either silenced or co-opted. And so people didn't really get a chance to actually hear and see those contributions. Right now, there's a lot of work being done to make sure that those things are uplifted. When we talk about intersectionality, that term was actually a term by an African-American woman by the name of Kimberly Crenshaw. But you hear it over and over again without credit being given to her. And again, that then impacts how people are seen and receiving those services. And so for African-American women to receive services by someone who aren't familiar with their culture, their background, and how these things intersect with each other, it creates a disparate impact. They aren't getting the services they need in the way that they need it. And so they're trying to fit into a service that really wasn't designed for them with people who are looking at them from a deficit perspective instead of from a space of, you know, you've experienced a trauma and I can assist you. And so this is really to help people recognize there we are people too. We experience trauma. We have a unique history and a background that has to be addressed in that process as well.
When you say that they're viewed from kind of a deficit background, can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. So when I say they're viewed from a deficit, I mean they're viewed from a perspective in which you are seen as already not being fully capable, fully whole, and also from a perspective of you have done something yourself to create this mess. Which isn't a fact, but it's the way that a lot of people in our community are viewed. We are.
You said which is a fact or is not a fact?
It is not a fact at all. The fact of the matter is that we are whole people who have experienced tremendous trauma that has not been adequately addressed or dealt with. And today we're dealing with the ramifications of that. A lot of the poverty that you see in our communities, a lot of the lack of access is due to systems that were put in place, and we are still dealing with those. So people who haven't had those experiences feel like, do something different. Pull yourself up, when they don't recognize that there were actually walls and blocks built, put in position to hinder people from actually achieving. Unfortunately, for those of us who are fortunate enough to make it through some of those barriers, sometimes we're propped up to say, see, they did it, why can't you do it? And that is not an accurate comparison. Resiliency is different for each person. People deal with their trauma in different ways. The ways that trauma is passed on from generation to generation varies. But when you have collective community trauma, when you have a whole group of people who were systematically held in one particular area without access to resources, you are definitely going to see some behaviors that are antisocial because they're dealing with trauma and there's no outlet and there has been no way for them to get the help that they need or even know that they needed help. And so one of the things that Douglas will be doing is making it our business to address that trauma. And I want people to know that Douglas has been addressing that trauma for a while, but we want people to know that we're doing it. The Frederick Douglass Recovery Center has been providing those services at least since the 70s. I mean, mental health services. And we're going to be expanding those services and making ourselves more visible, more accessible to the community. We want people to know that receiving services for your mental health is not taboo. It's a real thing. We all need it. We all have issues. We all have experienced some sort of trauma in our lives. I don't know one person who has not experienced some type of trauma. The difference is our coping mechanisms and who helps us with that trauma.
Do you anticipate that there will be a cost? And actually, is there a cost for the counseling that's provided at the Douglass?
Right now, with most counseling services, there are costs. However, anybody that receives any kind of Medicaid or anything like that, they can actually receive services. We do accept Medicaid. We are going to be expanding, looking at the different types of insurances that we can accept, and also a sliding fee scale so people can access those things. However, the counseling groups are free of charge. There's no charge for those at all. We have a men's trauma group,
right?
And we have a women's trauma group.
A support group, so to speak. The support groups are free, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Tell me why you are interested in pursuing social justice work at the Douglass. Why are you passionate about having that issue reside there? And who is the audience you're seeking to serve with that?
The primary audience that I'm seeking to serve in Douglass is the African-American community, the people who reside right on the north side of Kalamazoo. Anybody is welcome to receive those services, come and participate in those services, but that is the primary audience. My passion is for my people. and I don't believe that you should have to jump through hoops to get the services that you need. If they are right there in your back door, they should be accessible to you right there in your back door. And so we're going to be making it our business to make sure that the people right there in the community know that these services are there and that they are for them to participate in. And we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that they're accessible to them. For me, providing services to people in the community, particularly...
Is that what you mean by being social justice focused?
Yes, and.
Okay.
Yes, and. So one of the things that I'm working on right now is a new group for young men of color, and it is entitled Douglass Young Men of Promise. And the Douglass Young Men of Promise is really, really new. I have one founding member right now. And this group is going to focus on young African-American men recognizing and understanding what internalized racism is, systemic racism, and how they can work to overcome and actually create change within their community for their community to be the community that they desire it to be, and to help them achieve the promise, whatever that is for them. The age range for this group is 12 to 25.
And when you say, I'm sorry, when you say the promise, not the Kalamazoo promise, but just the promise of what their life goals might be.
You got it.
Okay.
So the goal will be for this group of young men to actually be in connection with other men, mm-hmm. other African-American men.
So a partnership between youth and adult men.
Mm-hmm. Adult African-American mm-hmm. men who are in various career paths, you know, be it education, be it a trade, be it entrepreneurship, but who may have had some struggles along the way themselves, who can connect with these young youth, share with them their own history, connect them with information about their history as African-American people, the positive things that have been done and the contributions, and their responsibility to themselves and to their community to make it better.
And I believe I had interrupted you. You were saying what the age group was?
12 to 25, with the goal of being in 12, that middle school age, all the way to 25, because by the time you're 25, you should have reached, you completed high school, completed a trade of some sort, a two-year degree, a four-year degree, or whatever success looks like for you by that time, with the intent on you then feeding back to the younger group.
When do you hope to kick that off?
My hope, my dream, is to kick this off in the spring. So we're in the recruitment phase right now. We're hoping to kick it off in the spring. And then once it's up and going, you will hear a report back, because that's part of the process, is for them to share with the larger community what this program is doing for them and how important it is for them. And to actually create a platform for young men to be heard. There isn't often where we get to hear from young men, particularly young men of color, the positive things that are happening in their lives, the struggle, but then all of the good. We hear so often about, you know, all of the negative things that are happening, but we don't talk about the good at the end. We don't talk about sustainability of that good. We don't talk about how we wrap around and support the good. The majority of the youth that I've come in contact with this last month and before, they're all really good kids. They just have some struggles. And they need us to wrap around them. I'm a firm believer in the village. And the Douglas is a village. And because we are a village, it's our responsibility to take care of the other members of the village.
Is there a question or a topic that I did not cover that you would like to address?
Well, you know, I really would like people to know that the Douglas Community Association has stood for so long because the community recognizes the need to have an organization that is meant for them, by them, to serve them. And we will continue to work towards that. You may see some changes, but all the changes are going to be for the good. We are, and you should expect us to be growing and to really be visible and present. For people to know when they come down Patterson Street that that big building is the Douglas. It's not the library. It's not the Boys and Girls Club. It's the Douglas, and it's for them.
In December 2016, Cherie Thomas became executive director of the Douglas Community Association, an outreach center in Kalamazoo. Today's interview is a longer version of one that first aired in January of this year. To share this and other past West Southwest shows with others, visit WMUK.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Arlene McMichael.